Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Carter et al. Titled, Sympathetic Neural Responsiveness to Sleep Deprivation in Older Adults, Sex Differences. This article was published May 31st, 2019. Joining me today are Associate Editor Nisha Charkudian, Lead Author Jason Carter, and Content Expert Nina Stockenfeld. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Differences between the sexes in blood pressure regulation lead to, in general, lower blood pressure and less risk of hypertension in premenopausal women compared to men of similar age and health status. Some of the mechanisms for these differences are related to differences between men and women in sympathetic neural control of the circulation. Since some of the mechanisms are specifically influenced by estrogen, women's risk of hypertension increases sharply right around the time of menopause. We also know that sleep and lack of sleep have strong influences on blood pressure and on the activity of sympathetic vasoconstrictor nerves. So an important area of investigation has included looking at the relationships among these variables with aging. In the present study, Carter and colleagues evaluated the influence of total sleep deprivation on sympathetic neural activity and blood pressure in a group of older men and women. Jason, could you get us started by giving us a summary of your study and why you decided to do this very labor-intensive work? And also, could you summarize some of your major findings for us?
Thanks, Nisha. It's wonderful to be on this podcast with you and Nina. What really got us interested in the world of sleep was about 10, 15 years ago, we started to see some epidemiological data coming out to suggest an association between short sleep and things like hypertension, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, and other things. And what kind of emerged in the follow-on years back in the mid-2000s with that is a pivotal study, at least for our lab, that showed that these associations were much stronger in women. In other words, short sleep duration tended to have a stronger association with hypertension in women when compared to men. So our first study that we published in AJP Heart as well back in 2012, we were looking at young men and young women. And in that particular study, we found that there were indeed some sex differences with regard to sympathetic activity. The reason that and the impetus for doing this in older adults should be pretty obvious, but it really isn't the younger population that is at highest risk. In fact, it's older population and postmenopausal women in particular that are at the highest risk, even higher than their male counterparts at developing hypertension. What we previously saw was a predominant sympathetic response more so in the women, and we wanted to see if that persisted or was even maybe exaggerated in older women. And so in the particular study we did here, we used the same 24-hour total sleep deprivation model. What we saw in this particular study is when we deprived older women and older men of sleep, we saw a sympatho-excitatory response in the older postmenopausal women, and we did not see that in the older men. This paralleled to a certain extent what we had seen in the younger study, which was that MSNA decreased in the young men, but we had no change and a little bit of a creep upward in the young women. So it's sort of along a continuum to suggest that there are potentially different mechanisms at play, particularly the autonomic nervous system being at play when women are sleep deprived. What was interesting about the study is that blood pressure increased in both older men and older women, and we saw that in our young study as well. And so really, I think the take-home message from this study is that hypertension and the association between sleep deprivation and hypertension is real. We now have a newer study that just came out within the past few years that sampled over 700,000 individuals and showed this stronger association between hypertension and sleep in women. And I think we need to start taking seriously that relationship, what it means, in trying to drill down on mechanisms. And what this study suggests is that the sympathetic nervous system may be a large contributor to that health disparity in older women.
Thank you very much, Jason. Nina, I'd like to turn it over to you now. And if you could tell us, based on your work on mechanisms of cardiovascular physiology in women and in sex differences in cardiovascular mechanisms, what do you see as some of the important big picture aspects of the present study from Carter and colleagues?
First, I want to applaud Jason for this excellent paper and his focus on women and hypertension. Not only have women been understudied, but postmenopausal women are especially at risk for hypertension and also understudied. Further, I completely agree with Nisha that this is clearly a labor-intensive study. With regard to the big picture, I'd like to address the methods just a bit. The study draws, I think, some of its strength from the care these investigators took with regard to measuring hormones so they could test potential mechanisms for sex differences. I find that when I review and read a lot of papers, this is often neglected in such studies. And I call this big picture because we'll not learn mechanisms until investigators take this kind of care. This study also fits in well, very well, into the general findings that older women have a more difficult time controlling hypertension or their blood pressure in general than do older men and compared to younger women. And the mechanisms for the sex differences effect are not yet completely understood and are definitely multifactorial. These investigators focused particularly on MSNA and bowel reflex control, and the finding here that MSNA burst frequency is increased in women but not in men following sleep deprivation provides some insight, as these findings suggest increased sensitivity to a common stressor.
Thanks, Nina. Jason, I was interested to note in your discussion that you mentioned the potential importance of sleep as a treatment for hypertension. Although we always hear about the importance of getting enough sleep, this is an interesting perspective on the problem. Can you expand on this idea?
Yeah, thanks for picking up on that nuance, Nisha. That's interesting. It was intentional. We think through treatment strategies, and oftentimes we think of pharmacological treatments, and then we think of non-pharmacological treatments. And I take, for example, my field of I'm partly physiologist and partly a kinesiologist, and in the field of kinesiology, we've got the theme of exercise is medicine. ACSM, the American College of Sports Medicine, has done a great job branding that concept that exercise is medicine. I would like to take the approach that sleep is medicine. Maybe I can trademark that here on this show with you. But I think that certain areas of our field are far ahead and far behind on the non-pharmacological ways that we can treat different types of cardiometabolic diseases. And, you know, we're in a time when sleep is at an all-time low. If you look at the demographics, if you look at the reports that the CDC puts out, we are not only not getting enough sleep, but we have 90% of our youth population that is in the clinically defined sleep deprivation. This is a huge problem. It's contributing to aspects related to obesity. We're trying to link it to certain mechanisms with regards to hypertension. And yet, it's something we can all do. We can't all do it very well sometimes, but it's something we can all do. And there are strategies we can take to improve our sleep. And I really do look at it as something that is an underutilized treatment strategy. And I don't think the sleep community has done a strong enough job in advocating for that. It's kind of almost worn as a badge of honor that you work hard and don't get enough sleep. And I think we need to start treating sleep just like we treat good nutrition, stress reduction, as well as exercise, as sort of that holistic approach to trying to maintain a healthy balance in our lives.
Thanks so much, Jason. I really couldn't agree more. And part of the reason I picked up on that is because I personally feel very strongly about it myself, and maybe because I am so attached to my own sleep, and I do lecture my own family quite a bit on getting enough sleep. I'm going to force them to listen to this podcast. But I really appreciate those perspectives, and I agree with you that I hope that as a community in physiology, we'll start doing a better job of getting that message out there. Nina, I'd like to turn it back to you. We know that a lot of questions remain unanswered with regard to women's cardiovascular health, especially for postmenopausal women. Based on Jason's study, what do you see as important follow-up questions for future work?
Well, I think we all know that cardiovascular disease is still the single biggest killer of women, and hypertension is one of the leading risk factors for cardiovascular disease. And this relationship is especially profound in postmenopausal women. And aging in both men and women is characterized by increases in blood pressure, but the age-related increases are more rapid in women than in men. And it appears that hypertension has been shown now to be more difficult to control in women than in men, even when the similar drugs are used. This is likely because as women age, they lose the protection of estrogen, as we discussed before, particularly in the vessels, and the ratio of estrogen and androgen changes as well. And this is really nicely pointed out by Dr. Carter's study. Thus, a primary question and a long-standing one for future studies is to better understand the mechanism for estrogen effects on the cardiovascular system in women. We still, as much work as we've been doing over the past number of years, we still really don't understand this relationship, why and how estrogen can be cardioprotective in women. I also thought that some follow-up studies, including androgen effects on MSNA in postmenopausal women, would be of enormous interest, considering that postmenopausal women are now beginning to take androgens to treat a number of postmenopausal ailments.
Thanks, Nina. Those are fantastic ideas. So, Jason, would you like to add any additional comments or thoughts as we wrap up this podcast?
I'd just like to say I think Nina has a lot of excellent points with regards to the sex steroids and a lot of unanswered questions that are out there. You know, one of the things that caught us a little bit off guard when we did this, you'll notice that in this particular study, our sample of older men had significantly higher concentrations of plasma estradiol compared to the age-matched postmenopausal women. And at first, I was confused by this, but it's important to remember that aromatase aids in the conversion of free testosterone to estradiol, and that this was progressively increases with age. And so it's ironic that the plasma estradiol levels are higher in our older men than it even is in the postmenopausal women, showing how dramatic this shift is in sex steroids. And you think of these women who their entire lives have had very high levels of estradiol and progesterone, and now there's testosterone in the mix. I just don't think we know enough about that. And Nina did a nice job of pointing out that there's a lot for us to figure out with these relationships.
Thanks, Jason. I couldn't agree more. Nina, did you have any additional final comments?
I was curious to know, Jason, what you guys made of the fact that the older men in this study did have mild hypertension and the women did not. Their blood pressure was, until the sleep deprivation intervention, their blood pressure was very healthy blood pressure, and the older men's was still slightly higher.
I think that's an excellent point. We had hoped we'd have a little bit more of a match when it came to the blood pressures. And for whatever reason, through the random sampling process, we ended up getting men that were on the mildly, you know, kind of prehypertensive stage already, and the women were lower, which is counterintuitive. I think part of that might be because although we tested individuals that we considered quote unquote older, it was still a pretty low age of only 60 years for both groups. And so I think we may have to go a little bit older even yet to get to that point where the hypertension actually surpasses. But it would suggest to me that we're already beginning to see it even in this kind of mildly older age group. And just think of what might be occurring even in the later stages of the lifespan. And so I think you bring up an excellent point. It was surprising to us as well. And I think even underscores further that we may need to pay attention to this relationship with the autonomic nervous system.
At this point, I'd like to thank Jason Carter and Nina Stackenfeld for joining us for this very interesting and provocative podcast. Kara, back to you.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.